Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Wilsonville, Oregon. Today is Thursday, January 31st, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 4 in Bill's story. Paragraph 3 is what we're going to unpack today. Starts with, we went to live with my wife's parents, reading through two paragraphs that ends with, sobriety, which renewed my wife's hopes on page 5, the top of page 5. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Ellen D., the 12 traditions, Reggie O., and reading the text today would be Donna W. and Leslie W. Thanks so much for that service, for sure. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting is 12482, 12,482, and that would be for Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. And then we have another one from this morning already, our 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. That share ID number is 12486, 12,486 for January 31st, 2019, Thursday. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Ellen D. to read the 12 steps. Would you please press star 1, Ellen D.? Would you please press star 1, Ellen D.?
Okay. Hi, it's Ellen D. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen D. I will now ask Reggie O. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you, Melanie. Good morning, everybody. And these are the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Reggie O. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature that we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And please take note, the star 1 process is the acceptable method for muting. The other by your phone still interrupts the phone line. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in Bill's story on page 4. Paragraph 3 starts with, we went to live with my wife's parents. Reading through two paragraphs, we're going to unpack two today, and that ends over on page 5 with, which renewed my wife's hopes. I will now ask Donna W. to read those two paragraphs and share her experience with those directions on that page. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Melanie. This is Donna W. calling from Palo Alto, California, and so grateful to be recovered and in the program for today to be clean and sober. We went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as the result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. My wife began to work in a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, and often 3, got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s, and I would pay my bills at the bar and delicatessens. This went on endlessly, and I began to awaken very early in the morning, shaking violently. A tumbler full of gin, followed by half a dozen bottles of beer, would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation, and there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. Well, this is the beginning of the end of Bill's hope. You know, this is the beginning of Bill's hopelessness, where it really got so bad. And you know, he doesn't work for 5 years. He's hardly sober, and he loses a job as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. And this is where liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. So as I read this, it reminds me of a period in my life, about the year or two before I came into Overeaters Anonymous years, I think it was around 2000, 2001, where food became a necessity. It was no longer a luxury. I was in a job that was very demanding. I was really impressed with myself. You know, I had arrived, as Bill says, two pages prior. I had arrived. I was wearing nice suits. I was in meetings with executives. And I was coming home from work and eating bags and boxes. And it was a necessity. I couldn't stop. I thought I could control the situation. You know, I'm a smart person. I was doing well at work, and I thought I could control the situation. And yet in these meetings with the executives, I couldn't breathe because my suit pants were so tight. I had to unbutton. I was giving a presentation, and I had to unbutton the top because I couldn't breathe. They were so tight. So that was when I reached my top weight of 194 pounds. And so, you know, I was a high functioning addict. I was overeating, and I would sneak food, and I thought I could control the situation. And then I got into doing boot camp. So, you know, I started working out and losing weight there, but I, you know, I still wasn't facing the fact that I couldn't control my food situation. So thankfully, I did get into OA, and put down the food. And where I'm looking now is, you know, I am maintaining a healthy body weight. I'm down 70 pounds from my top weight. But where am I still trying to control the situation, you know, in my life? What I'm working on right now is where I'm still trying to control my body, my weight. You know, where am I trying to control my my health? What else am I depending on besides God? If it's not the food, am I depending on my weight, on other people, on my work? And so I'm really looking at letting go of controlling the situation and letting go and letting God. And with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Donna W. The lines are now open for others to comment their experience, strength, and hope on those two paragraphs today. Paragraph
Ori.
3 on page 4 for 2. Hi, Ori.
I'm sorry, I jumped again.
You're welcome. That's okay. You're fine. Got you, though. Anybody
Bruce.
Else today?
Bruce.
Jackie H.
Got you, Bruce.
Jackie H.
Did I hear Liad?
Lisa J.R.
Lisa J.R.
Nan K.
Nan
Julie
K.
E.B.
Julie E.B. I think that's it for now. So I have Ora B, Bruce E, Jackie H, is that what it was? Lisa J R, Nan K, and Julie E B. Hi, Ora, again. You're on.
Good morning. Good morning. Can I be heard?
You betcha.
Great.
I'll let y'all know if you can, okay?
Great. All right, cool. This reading takes me back, and just thinking about the amount of food that was necessary just to get me through the day. And I've been employed by the same employer. I've worked for the same company for about going on 20 years now. And in that 20 years, I've had several times where I've been out of work because of basically my eating. You know, I would be in relapse, and there have been, like I said, several periods where I had to go to treatment. And I just couldn't function. I couldn't function in life anymore. And this last time, my dysfunctionality got to the point where, you know, I wanted to commit suicide. And I was actually practicing it. I don't know how committed I was to that, but I sure was practicing it. And I was a shut-in. I couldn't leave my house. My counselor at Kaiser had to send the police to my door because she was worried about me, and it was pretty dicey. And you know, and that's where this thing has taken me to. It is no joke. And you know, I have no doubt at this point that this will kill me without this program. Like, you know, it's just it is what it is. And, you know, in Bill's story, we see the progression of the illness. And, you know, that's my experience, too. Just seeing where this progressed to, how it started, and, you know, to where it progressed to, you know, last, what, 2.5 years ago. It's just incredible. And the story's not done yet, so to be continued. Thank you for letting me talk. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ori. Appreciate that. Bruce E., you're going to be next, and then after you will come Jackie H.
Okay. It's Bruce E. in Southwest Florida. And he went to work, or he went to live with his wife's parents. Well, that's just another bottom, isn't it? I mean, that is a humbling bottom to hit, where you can't pay your own rent or mortgage, and you have to go to work, you have to go live with your wife's parents, and then on top of that, he has a brawl with a taxi driver, which makes him look real bad. Then he doesn't even work for five more years. He goes without having a job, a regular job. Excuse me. And he's hardly sober for five solid years. His wife, poor wife, has to go to work. She was really committed to him. He has to go to work. She comes home exhausted from work, and here he is drunk. And liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Well, what happened to me? How does this relate to me concerning food? Well, at first, man, it was the greatest luxury in the world, you know. That birthday cake with my daughter, that tasted real good. I can get by with eating two or three more pieces of the cake and, you know, get away with that. And, man, that's just great, you know. And eat dinner along with it, a huge dinner along with it. That's the luxury point. Now, at some point, I stepped over the line, and it was not a luxury anymore. Now it's a necessity. Man, that birthday cake's in there. I'm laying in bed at night, and I know that birthday cake's in there. Go back out and eat two or three pieces of it, and then end up eating the whole cake. And now how am I going to explain that to my daughter that I ate her whole birthday cake? And now I'm starting to really have some repercussions from this ugly disease that I acquired. And so, you know, of course, I'm triggering the allergy, and that's triggering the phenomenon of craving, obviously. Small deal, he'd get him a couple $100. Yeah, once in a while he'd make a little money, and he wouldn't even share it with his wife. He'd just pay his bills with it, you know. And the bars and delicatessens. Early in the morning, now he's waking up in the morning, he's got to have that birthday cake. Man, he's got to have that, oh, save two pieces of birthday cake and get up in the morning to eat that. Oh, boy, you know, and then eat breakfast and then start craving food all morning long. Nevertheless, I thought I could control. He still thought he could control it all that time for years. I thought I could control this thing, and I had no control. So, with that, thank you, everybody, and I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. Jackie H., you're up. Lisa J.R. will follow you.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. And the line that just stuck out to me was, I still thought I could control the situation. And that is how I've lived my life. That's been the story of my life. Not just food, but everything. I wanted to control everything. But we'll go back to the food, and I'll think, okay, how I can control. I did really well at controlling, but it was white knuckle controlling. I still, every day, I was faced with what am I going to eat today, or what am I not going to eat, or what new plan can I incorporate into my life so that I can eat the things that I want to eat and still stay thin. And so I'll look at this diet, and then the paleo diet came along, and that was wonderful because I could eat all my goodies. And I just really wanted to eat like a normal person. I wanted to control the situation. And I wanted to do it from the outside.
in. I was going to control. Well, what I have so come to know is that this is an inside job. And what I didn't know, honestly, when I was doing all this controlling, I knew, because I was in the other program, I was in AA, and I knew I had to put the alcohol down before I could do the steps and move forward. I had no clue, I really did not, that food had anything to do with my body and being allergic to it. I did not know that. And thank you, God, when that was said to me, that I have an allergy to certain alcoholic foods, I can put them down and then I can move forward. I was thrilled beyond thrilled, and I was glad to do that. I put it down. I put the alcoholic foods down. And you know what? Today, it's from the inside out. I don't have to control anything that I eat. I don't have to stand in front of the mirror and look to make sure everything looks right. I don't have to control my food anymore. I don't think about it. My food is for my nourishment so that I can get my little butt up and go out and be of service to God and my fellows. And that's all I ever wanted food to be. That's really what I wanted. But I tried so many ways to get it to that place, and nothing worked because I had no clue the allergy of the body. And so when we talk about abstinence on these lines, it's not a flippant thing. It's something that is very important for us to look at. Thank you. And so today I'm happy, joyous, and free. Absolutely. Thank you so much for letting me share. I'll pass.
You're welcome, Jackie H. Lisa J.R., it's your turn. Nan K. will come in after you.
Thank you, Melanie, for your service, and thank you, everybody, for being on the line. Lisa J.R. here from Baltimore, Maryland. So grateful for this reading and so grateful that we go over it year after year, simply because I need to be reminded of how bad it got. I have that built-in forgetter like everybody else, and I can get some sobriety under my belt and feel like I've arrived at any moment, any given time. And, you know, the periods of sobriety that renewed my wife's hope, well, once I entered marriage and I crossed that invisible line with the disease that I was a subject of King Cupcake, I had nowhere to go. And my husband didn't really get it for the first early part of our marriage until one night he caught me in my sleep. He was afraid to awaken me, eating a gallon bucket of caramel corn in my sleep. And he realized, my God, you know, so he would buy me Jenny Craig. He would buy me, you know, the pre-made foods. And I couldn't, there was no sobriety with me. I couldn't get through, you know, 6 hours without demolishing, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday's worth of food before noon. I was a junkyard dog. I was an animal in this disease. It laid me low. It robbed me of everything that was precious to me, everything that validated me. It stole. I became an animal. And praise God, you know, again, picking up this book, doing this work, I have a 24-hour stay of execution from this illness. And, you know, I still have periods and little pockets of inebriety with my emotions, but now I can do something about them. I don't have to degrade myself to bathtub gin anymore. I went from an Epicurean to being White Castle, Taco Bell, just dollar store garbage. It was going to kill me, and I know that it still can. It's still out there waiting for me to rest on my laurels, and I thank you for letting me share with that. I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Nan K., you're up.
Hi.
E.B. will follow.
Hi, I'm Nan K. from Michigan, recovered. And when I was listening to the reader read the second paragraph, starting with liquor ceased to be a luxury, listening to that paragraph, I got anxious and remembered when I was there that liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. The word routine, this went on endlessly. I still thought I could control the vicious circle that I was in. Lack of power was definitely my dilemma. Control was always big in my life. I always thought that I was in control and that I could control. But I love the part on page 30 where it says, the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. I am so glad today that I don't have to be the controller, that I have found that I have a power greater than myself. And that is such a relief. And I love what someone shared, I think last week or a couple weeks ago, about ASAP. Always stop and pray. That's my motto today. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you so much, Nan Kay. And what we're going to do as soon as Julie E.B. shares is open up the lines for additional people to comment on those two paragraphs. So let me give you a reminder. We're on page 4 in Bill's story of the Big Book. We're on paragraph 3. We went to live with my wife's parents, and then it ends with page 5 on which renewed my wife's hopes to be able to share on that. But for now, we're going to listen to Julie E.B. to share on her comments.
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered by the grace of God. I'm just grateful today for my entire abstinence. I'm grateful for a gracious higher power who loves for and cares for me, even though I still am struggling at times with trying to be in control and not wanting to let my higher power be in control. I really identify, a lot of people have spoken about the descent into the food being necessary more and more, but as the food failed me, because as a higher power, it wasn't very trustworthy. It wasn't very kind to me. You know, some of us struggle to find or lean on a higher power, but when you come to realize that the food has been functioning as your higher power, you wonder, isn't there something better out there? Something that I could create and understand that would be a higher power to me. Because here's the deal. So when I couldn't control anymore, I continued to turn my control to other areas of life. I was the brawler. Even early this morning out on an overnight call, I felt I was right. And I felt self-righteous. And I did a 10-step by 4 a.m. this morning and am grateful to be able to be trying to connect to God and have God help me see the people that everyone was just trying to help. Everyone's doing the best they can, and I don't need to be a right fighter and a brawler. My money fell to pieces. A year ago at this very time, I was facing a legal sheet full of financial amends, and now there are a handful still on my list, still working on them, still paying them off. That is what being out of the food and in touch with a power greater than myself, how it creates an entire psychic change and a rearrangement for me. Now I can take care of things with God's help instead of being in charge of things. I can act responsibly without running the show. Thanks for letting me share. And if you're struggling, keep going. Keep listening. Oh. Thanks.
Sorry about that, stepping on your toes. Thank you. That was Julie E.B. sharing. And now the lines are open for additional folks to comment on those two paragraphs. Remember, we're on paragraph 3, page 4, and then paragraph 1, page 5. Who would like to comment?
Robin P.
Robin.
Kathleen O.
O-M.
Kathleen. Somebody with an M.
Cindy D.
It was Sue M.
Sue M. And then Cindy D.
Rebecca T.
Rebecca T. Okay, let's go with those for right now in the interest of time ticking away. We have Robin P., Kathleen O., Sue M., Cindy D., and Rebecca T. Hi, Robin.
Hi, thanks so much, Mel, for your service. I'm Robin P. I'm sorry there's some outside noise that I can't control right now, but I hope that you guys can hear me. I'm Robin P., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. You know, I'm so grateful that I'm in recovery today because I look at this dependence on his family. He was so dependent on his family and in such a humbling, horrible way and created so much havoc and worry and the family disease. It's such a bad family disease when everybody starts trying to save the person instead of reliance on God and the fellowship. And I'm so grateful today to have reliance on God and the fellowship so that I don't have to rely on family and create havoc. People were so worried about me. My family, actually, my stepmom came and years ago before I got into recovery, she came all the way to New York where I was living just to try to see if I would eat some food. And because I was so afraid to eat anything and I was 80 pounds and I thought, I just need to lose 5 more pounds and I'll look fine. And that was the disease. And it's such a disease of denial. And it creates so much pain for so many people. And part of the denial of the disease is that we're the only ones that are affected. And all of the people around scrambling and Lois taking a job, which in those days was even more humbling. And then all the issues around Bill and the pregnancies and everything, just creating more and more havoc and more shame. And it's such a miracle to really know where my power comes from today instead of from the food, the illusion of control, and from the fellowship. You know, I really believe that when I'm a sheep on the outside of the fold, that's when the wolves get you. And today, being in the center of recovery, the center of the pack, I feel so fortified and so grateful. I don't feel like the Lone Ranger in isolation, desperate for something and reaching for the food. So God bless everybody in your recovery. Thanks for putting up with the noise in the background. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Robin P. Kathleen O., you're up. Sue M. will come in after you.
Good morning, Melanie, and hello, everyone on the line. It's good to be here this morning. Kathleen, a recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. And I, too, love reading Bill's story every now and then because I do need to be reminded what it was like for me. I can totally relate to this. I'm blessed with really amazing parents who had no addictions. They weren't perfect, but they were really wonderful parents, but they had no addictions. And so for them to watch me, how I was around food, and when I got in high school and really started gaining weight, and I would go on, my mother would always help me go on diets, and because, you know, she knew this didn't make me happy, weight, and I would lose weight on some of these diets. And she'd be really hopeful. Only to get it back again, I would get it back again. And it was really hard on my mom especially. You know, she weighed like 135 when she was 9 months pregnant. I couldn't understand why I didn't inherit her genes, but I didn't. And so this disease is so, I mean, I was the master of denial, master of delusion. You know, every morning, not being able to get through the day unless I had my stash of binge foods, and I would go gather them all up and head off to work, eating in the car along the way, sneaking them during work, you know, hiding them in the desk. And it was torture. It was such torture because I would always say, I could control this. Tomorrow, I'm not going to do this. Well, went on forever. So to be able to be reminded of why I do what I do, because really what I do now is more about the emotional sobriety I get in this program. You know, I don't need to run other people's lives. I don't need to worry about their path. I need to support them, but I don't need to try to change everybody and fit everything into the way I think it should be. And to have the freedom from not having, you know, to be able to look at those foods that I could never get enough of and truly not wanting them is absolutely a miracle. And it happens with working these steps. And, you know, I have proven to myself, if I rest on my laurels, I can go back. And I have thankfully never gone back to, you know, my really bad binge foods, but I go back to having more, you know, healthy food, but more. And it's like, I need to, you know, make sure I have that in check too. Thank you so much. I pass. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you, Kathleen O. Sue M., you're up. Cindy D. will come after. Sue M., if you would press star 1, that will unmute your line.
Hi, thank you. This is Sue M.
Sue M., try star 1 one more time, please.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
great. There's a little bit of wonky stuff going on the line.
Okay, thank you. I remember reading Bill's story years ago. I've been in OA maybe 6 years, and then I started having problems. It seemed if everything was going fine, but I remembered that at the first part of Bill's story, I didn't really identify with, and really I was like, oh, you know, I don't want to have to rehab Bill's story ever again. But this latter part, the program is so wonderful. Everyone is just pointing out so many things that I realized I had. I was very dependent. My employment history was very sketchy for quite a while, and that's what this. That's what this dependence on food did to me. And then eventually my snack foods did become, my junk food did become a necessity. And I really like, I can really identify that having food as a higher power, and even when I was abstinent, I was still white-knuckling it. You know, then I had to have something else that would take my mind off of you know, off of whatever. And then when I finally got to a point a year ago when, you know, some health issues that I couldn't distract myself anymore. So I'm just really, really grateful for this program and for this wisdom. And I just thank you all for being here. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Sue M. Cindy D., you're up, and then Rebecca T. will come in after you, and we might have time for a couple more to share after that. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Melanie. How are you today?
Well, thank
you. Hi, this is Cindy. Thank you. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas, and I'm thinking about this sentence also about control, still thinking I could control it, and really thinking back to when did that start, and I can remember being, you know, a young kid, somewhere between 8 and 11, and being asked to babysit all my younger brothers and sisters because my parents both worked. And, you know, I didn't know how to do that, but I sure tried to control it. I mean, thought I could maybe be a hero somehow, turned into a general and a bossy person. And I think that's when I started trying to control food, and when food became my friend, it became, you know, my solace, my escape. And I can remember days staying home from school and just eating while everybody else was gone and living in my fantasy world. And I remember one day the vice principal came to the door, wanted to make sure I was okay because I was missing so much school. And I said, yeah, I'm fine. You know, I'll be okay. It's just a cold or whatever I said. And you know, he asked about my grades, and my grades were great. You know, I was an overachiever and managed to keep good grades. But I carried that over into my work life. I was, you know, always taking the tough job where I could go in and be a savior. You know, I was known as a troubleshooter. They'd move me around to areas that were struggling so I could, quote unquote, fix it. And it just grew and grew, this, you know, control hero complex thing that I had. And in the meanwhile, you know, my disease was raging and I was getting to my top weight. And, you know, no matter what I did, I couldn't control it. And I find even today, now being recovered, that I'm still looking for ways to control things and having to, you know, work on that every single day. And thank goodness for the steps and for 10 steps in particular, that where I get to see exactly what my character defects are looking like today. And I get to turn to God for help. And I do find that as I work the program and as I work the 10th and 11th steps, I do get some peace and serenity. It doesn't mean I'm perfect. It doesn't mean it's gone. But it's certainly getting better. And the neutrality around the food is such an incredible miracle and gift. And, you know, I could see goal weight in my future, and I don't have to keep the big clothes in my closet anymore because I have trust and faith that I'm going to get to a healthy body weight. And I feel like I'm well on my way. So I'm so grateful that I found my way to back to OA and that I got a sponsor and worked the steps and that I continue to work them every day. And I'm grateful I have a place to come and be myself and say my truth. And so with that, I will pass. Thanks, Melanie.
Thank you, Cindy D. Rebecca T, you're going to come up next, but we're going to have time for a couple more people to share, I think. So be prepared. Paragraph 3, going through two paragraphs today at page 4 of Bill's story. Hi, Rebecca T.
Hey, guys. Awesome visionaries. It's Rebecca T. from Bakersfield, California. Gratefully recovered compulsive overeater one day at a time. Yeah, you know, the shares touched a lot of things inside of me. Definitely words of control. And I was trying to relate to my story with Bill, but how it was the same was the desperation and the sickness around my alcoholic foods. No matter what the pleas of people around me, the sadness I saw in my family's faces or physicians, or even when I was really young and I was teaching swimming, and even my people that I would teach, private swim lessons, the adults would say, we don't understand, you're such a beautiful girl. You're such a good swim teacher, but we don't understand why you're so fat. And, those are just, small little glimpses, moments of many, many, many moments that, my disease showed on the outside, but how it was different from Bill's was that, I made sure that I was holding my own, meaning that was really the control part that, so in my mind, I had said, look, I'm going to do everything on my own. I'm going to take care of my own. I'm also going to take care of everyone else around me. I don't need any of your help. But the food was what I ate at. So I ate at other people's inability to do life. I ate at people's inability to control their own emotions. I ate at people's lack of whatever I thought was judgment in my head. And the food was justification for, this is the only thing that I have to console me. This is the only thing that's, always consistent. I deserve this. This is my gift as a result of my, attention to all of society. And, thank God once I put down the food, because it was going to kill me in terms of my weight and the conditions that were presenting themselves to me physically, then I started looking at, wow, I have a mental problem. And I had no idea. So thankfully, one day at a time, and you know, it's coming up today. It's coming up in my workplace, my judgments and my control. And so thankfully, one day at a time, I can work at all those things, and I'm going to keep coming back. Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Rebecca T. Spot for a couple more folks to comment on those two paragraphs. I'm ready.
Patty.
Patty and
Deborah
John. So I got Patty T and John K. Hi, Patty.
Oh, hi, everybody. Hi, Melanie. Oh, my gosh. I'm so happy to be here from Southern California and recovered today. You know, since we started reading Bill's story, which, you know, I'm not really sure I ever really read it like we're reading it. I have been incredibly uncomfortable, and that is because I relate to every way he was. When he says here, liquor ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. I can look back at the times in my life, and you have to understand that's a long, long time, because I didn't even come into these rooms until I was 51 years old. So from the time I was 5 until I was 51, I was eating compulsively, and it was a necessity, because I did not know how to be okay. I didn't know how to be comfortable in my own skin, you know. And when he says bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, often 3, I just know the bags and bags of food that I would drive through and hoard in my car and get out on the other, you know, take out on the other side so the neighbors couldn't see how much I was taking in the house. And, you know, this went on endlessly, to the point where I actually ate myself to bankruptcy. And I'm not kidding. I had to file bankruptcy because I had charged up so many credit cards for food. I had nothing to show for it except 100 extra pounds on my body. And yet, here he says, I still thought I could control the situation. I kept thinking I could control it. Today, I'm really uncomfortable because I'm really vulnerable. And that means I'm open. And today I have my fellows, and today I have a higher power that I can turn over my discomfort to and just ask for his grace and direction to move forward abstinently and recovered. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Patty T. And after John K's share, we'll close this meeting and we'll get prepared for the goodies that come after the closing. But for now, let's listen to see what John K has to share on these two paragraphs. Hi, John.
Hi, Melanie. I'm the closer. That's called the headliner in comedy. That line always hits me. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. You know, it's such a perfect example or description of addiction as far as I'm concerned, you know. I was reading this thing about food addiction, and it was talking, and it talked about the positive part of addiction and the negative part. The positive being whatever high or thing you got from it, but the negative is you keep eating because you don't want to feel the effects of the withdrawal, you know. And that was my story. I always tell, it's a funny story. This isn't an OA story. It's more of an AA story. But when I first came and started, you know, auditing AA, I said to a guy, I don't think I'm really an alcoholic, because I stopped for like 3 months last year, and then I stopped for about 3 weeks a couple months ago. And the guy looked at me and he said, you know, a person who is not an alcoholic doesn't have to periodically keep stopping to prove to himself that he's not an alcoholic. Well, you know, the same thing later happened to me. You know, my story, when I look back at it later, so parallel builds. You know, I could never figure out this food. Why can't I figure this out? I'm so smart. Then I come to OA and, aha, now all of a sudden everything makes sense. I know what I have to do now. And sure enough, I'm pounding on the bar asking myself, how did it happen again? Because I couldn't get it, you know. And, you know, for me, I look at some of those things since I've been in OA. That great line from More About Alcoholism, by every form of self-deception and experimentation, you know, I tried to prove myself an exception to the rule. Now, that in AA is all or nothing, right? But in OA, this self-deception and experimentation for me had to do with specific foods I didn't want to let go of. You know, nevertheless, I thought I could control the situation. Well, you know, eventually I did let go of those foods, but, you know, I practically locked my fingernails in them, you know. I had to be beaten into a sense of reasonableness about them. But the main thing that made it hard to give up some of those foods after being in program and doing relatively well was that it was no longer about the weight. You know, the weight drove everything. It drove me to OA. It drove me to work on being abstinent, et cetera, et cetera. Now, those foods that I was still holding on to, it was about my sanity, not my weight. It was about how much control these few little foods still played in my life. You know, I was like dancing like a puppet on a string. And then I was jumping through hoops to validate why I was still eating them and calling myself abstinent, you know. And when I saw, and I look back now, it was the difference between controlled eating and abstinence. And today, you know, I'm finally abstinent. And my definition of it is essentially the line from the 10th Step Promises. I have been placed in a position of neutrality about the food, which is always what I wanted in life. And the thing I had to go through, I don't know how long, to figure out, and it's so simple. If I want to be neutral with the food, I have to be willing to give up all of the foods with which I can't be neutral. It's just so, it's blazingly simple, but when it's those foods are still calling you, you can't see the thing that's 2 inches from your nose. And once you give them up, then you can move on and deal with the rest of life. Anyway, Melanie, thanks for letting me share.
You're welcome. Thanks so much, John Kay. And that does send us a sharing portion of this particular meeting on these paragraphs. Thank you so much. If you aren't aware, we do close out this meeting with a reading and the Serenity Prayer, but we're still hanging around for 10 minutes because we have good stuff yet to come. Leslie W., would you please read from the Big Book on page 164? Our book is meant to be suggestive only, and then after that, we'll all join you in the Serenity Prayer, okay?
I will. This is Leslie W., recovered in Tennessee. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation. You can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you in.